Ukrainian troops have attacked along the Russian front line in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region and southern Zaporizhia region. In what may be the start of a larger counteroffensive, Russia claims to have thwarted the actions, while Kyiv accuses Moscow of false information. Keir Giles is the senior consulting fellow with Chatham House's Russia and Eurasia program. Welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning.
In your view, is this the start of the long-heralded Ukrainian counteroffensive?
It's really impossible to tell. In effect, it's even impossible to tell what's happening. In your little introduction there, you were talking about Ukrainian forces pushing forward, but we just don't have any reliable sources on what they really actually have done. Those reports are coming largely from Russia, and we've learned by now not to believe anything that comes from the Russian side. Ukraine isn't confirming or denying, and there's no independent verification of what's happening. Now, let's not forget a big component of Ukraine's success in its offensive last autumn was the secrecy, and they've been extremely good at keeping the planned offensive and its timing under wraps so far. So, as a lot of people are saying, we won't know it's happened until there's absolutely no doubt that it started.
How important is it when it does happen?
It is absolutely vital, because not only is there the need for Ukraine to liberate the occupied territories and its people who are under this savage Russian military occupation, but they also need to demonstrate success in order to keep their Western backers on side and to prove that they're not going to be dragged into another stalemate like the one that people were fearing in the summer of last year. But of course, the big break on this has been the reluctance of some of those Western backers to provide the weapon systems that Ukraine identified as being needed for this offensive. Germany putting the brakes on tanks, the United States not willing to provide long-range missiles. And again, we've gone through the process of delay and dither for these weapon systems being supplied. That's why we're no longer calling this a spring offensive, because it held it up so long.
And what would be the objective? I mean, is it to retake all of Donetsk, or is it smaller parts of that? Is that even clear?
Well, the Ukrainian side has been really careful to manage expectations. Now, a lot of people were getting quite excited about a repeat of that offensive last autumn and suddenly moving forward, taking large areas of territory. And Ukraine's very clear that they do actually need to demonstrate success, but they've also tried to tamp down these expectations that they're going to liberate all of the occupied territories, potentially even Crimea as well. But what we've seen just over the last few weeks is the evidence of Russia not being able to defend even its own borders. And that's been once again fueling hopes that actually Ukraine could make a significant breakthrough if the Russian military collapses or is just shown to be as inept as it has been throughout the previous phases of this conflict.
Yeah, but what are the examples that you're talking about as far as Russia's defense of its own borders is concerned?
We've had several incursions across the Ukrainian-Russian border where you have groups that are fighting on the Ukrainian side made up of Russians who are opposed to the current regime in Moscow, who are pushing forward more or less unopposed into Russian territory, taking over villages, small settlements, and not actually receiving any response from the Russian authorities at all. There seems to be no military presence there. There's no civil administration. Russians are simply running away before them. And of course, just today, this has been accompanied by a hack attack on Russian broadcasters, broadcasting a deep fake of President Putin, saying he was introducing martial law and those entire areas should be evacuated. So it looks like a coordinated demonstration that actually Russia, along that borderline, is more or less defenseless.
Can you repeat that?
Will cause Russia to pull troops away from those areas that it's defending along the rest of the front line.
The Ukrainians broadcast a deep fake version of Putin? Is that what?
Yes, absolutely right. It's hacking into the broadcasting system on television and radio and having Putin, or a deepfake of Putin, declaring general mobilization and also an evacuation of those border regions. Anybody that saw it, if they were convinced, would be immediately panicking.
Wow, that is incredible. What about the presence of the Wagner Group? Obviously, they were there in Bakhmut, handed that to the Russian forces. What's their role in defending against a Ukrainian counteroffensive?
It'll be really interesting to see what their next step is. They've carried out this performance of attempting to seize Bakhmut and then blaming the Russian regular armed forces for everything that went wrong there. And then they've stepped back. So it'll be interesting to see whether they do in fact take an active part in the defense against the coming Ukrainian offensive, or if they're actually holding back and husbanding their own forces for any eventual showdown with the Russian army itself. Now, in another really quite striking development today, you've had Wagner kidnapping, beating up a Russian army colonel, a brigade commander, and extracting a video confession from him. If Wagner carries on doing things like this to the army unpunished, it really shows who actually holds the power in the Kremlin and who has the real protection, and it's not the armed forces.
Why do you call what's unfolded in Bakhmut a performance by the Wagner Group?
There was no military value to Bakhmut that actually justified all of the effort that Wagner put into it and all of the tens of thousands of casualties that they suffered, largely people rounded up from Russia's prisons. It was purely in order to demonstrate Wagner's utility and the uselessness of the Russian armed forces. And this is a part of the power play that Prigozhin, the leader of Wagner and the owner of all of those associated companies with it, is mounting to actually bolster his own authority, plainly with some blessing from the Kremlin, otherwise he wouldn't have survived this long.
You mentioned the availability and the supply of Western weapons and weapons systems to the Ukrainians, the holdup from the Germans, as well as the long-range missiles from the United States. Australia's Hawkeye armoured cars are reportedly bound for Ukraine in a new assistance deal, but I noted at the weekend that there was some clarification sought after the Ukrainian officials that were at the Shangri-La dialogue in Singapore seemed to announce an Australian offer of support, perhaps some months ahead of time, and then the Australians saying, well, we'll announce it when we'll announce it. Is it correct to observe that perhaps the enthusiasm from the West to give to Ukraine is starting to wane?
Yes, that's happened across the West and across the coalition of backers, but it's a much less powerful impetus on all of this than this reluctance that we've seen led by the United States to give Ukraine anything that could actually cause damage to Russia itself. The US is still petrified of triggering what Russia refers to as escalation, and this idea that Russia has sown in a lot of Western minds that they might eventually resort to tactical nuclear weapons if they're sufficiently offended has meant that the United States throughout has been providing these weapons with one foot on the brake. And it's come down to countries like the UK and also, paradoxically, Australia at an earlier stage to lead the way in terms of showing that weapons can be supplied to Ukraine and they can be given the support without triggering anything like that Russian reaction.
Keir Giles, appreciate your insights. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Keir Giles from Chatham House.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.